This morning I'd like to give an overview in broad strokes of the range of practice in this tradition, in the insight meditation tradition, from samatha, which means calm or tranquility. By the way, if my voice goes down and you have trouble hearing me, please just make a little gesture to prompt me to speak louder, because I know my voice does sometimes fall and we have some white noise with the air conditioner here. So please remind me of that if you have trouble hearing. You can also if you have a hearing loss and you're having trouble hearing, you can move also closer. So feel free to do that, to change your position. So this range or spectrum of practices, from samatha, meaning calmness, tranquility, to vipassana, meaning insight or seeing deeply, the insight. Of course, when we translate Pali words, the translator or interpreter finds an English word or a French word or whatever language that works, kind of. But these translations are never exact. So I've heard that a more precise translation of vipassana is seeing deeply, and so we're seeing deeply into the nature of our experience. So calmness, tranquility, and then choiceless awareness, which is a when mindfulness is well established, and we're just kind of there's a steadiness of attention. So this spectrum or range of practices, it's not like, you go to first grade and then you go to second grade and then you go to third grade. It's not that kind of training where it's accumulating knowledge and we are kind of building on knowledge and building a framework of knowledge. It's not that. These are trainings of the mind, developments of the mind. And so we find ourselves in a very natural way, and this is part of what we develop as we become skilled adepts. That's a word that's sometimes used, an adept in meditation, somebody who really knows the practice, is familiar with the practice, familiar with their own practice. So each one of us will have a unique practice and within the range of practices. And so sometimes, we'll after practicing many years, we might find ourselves just wanting to calm the mind, to settle the mind and come back, collect the mind. But as time goes on, and I'm talking about years of practice, we find ourselves perhaps living more and more on the end of the spectrum of vipassana, choiceless awareness. Is Peter here? No, is Peter here? I'm wondering if Peter is Peter. Peter. Just noticing that he's missing. Oh, there you are. Okay. No, I was looking for you. I didn't see you. So it's a development of the mind and development of practice. So samatha is a practice in which we we choose an object, and when I say object, I'm not talking about a thing. It's a meditation object. So we choose a particular object that we're going to bring our attention to. And so usually it's the breath, just feeling the breath. And the breath is a really wonderful object for this tradition of meditation, this type of meditation, because it is in the present moment. And this practice is to bring our attention to our present moment awareness. So it's something that is always there. When the mind drifts away, we can always find it because there it is. It's not something that we have to keep creating with the mind, a mantra. Mantras can also be good meditation objects, but for the most part we use the breath. We can also use body sensation. I like to encourage people to use the breath because we can kind of localize it in a particular place in the body. Sound is another meditation object that comes and goes as well, so it's not necessarily as ready, in the moment when the mind comes back after having drifted away. So feeling the breath, coming back to the breath, and what we're doing in coming back to the breath is we're learning a very, very important skill, and that skill is let it go, or another word for saying that is renunciation. So when I get caught up in a story in the mind, something that happened in the past, something I'm remembering, something that I'm, feeling perhaps resentment about, or hurt or guilt, and I'm all caught up in this story, then I remember, oh yeah, the breath. Come back to the breath. And I realize I can let that go. That's actually a thought. That's what it is. It's a thought. It's not what happened. Or worrying about the future, anxiety, planning, that it's not the future, it's my thoughts about the future. It's my hopes and fears about the future. It's not what's really happening now. And collecting the mind and coming home to the breath trains the mind in renunciation, in letting go. And this is the real renunciation. Sometimes we hear the word renunciate or renunciation, and we think of a whole lifestyle of renunciation. That's for monks and nuns. But that's really the practice for all of us. And even for monks and nuns, their real renunciation is in the moment, in not clinging to the past or the future. But coming home is really a good way of thinking of it. Coming home to the breath, coming home to the body, coming home to rest in present moment awareness. And as we do this, as we practice this, and many, many times, collecting the mind, coming to rest, coming home, the mind over time begins to become more calm. And that's actually a very beautiful experience. It's what the Buddha called a spiritually pleasant experience, and it nourishes us to begin to find that sense of of coming home and being present in ourselves. And that we can find a sense of peace and contentment, you know, not through getting stuff, getting more stuff, or accomplishing some goal we set for ourselves. Not to say that goals are bad, but we don't always accomplish them or in the way that we want to. So can we find that sense of contentment and presence within ourselves, a sense of home, being at home within ourselves? And so samatha practice teaches us. And so in the beginning, it can feel like the mind, you know, is just really kind of touching the breath, and that there's a lot of noise in the background. You know, it feels like we keep aiming our attention at the breath, but it almost feels like in the background all our thoughts are still chattering away, you know, yakking away, and the mind doesn't really feel collected. But over time, as we keep coming back to the breath, coming home, resting in the breath, then the mind becomes more collected and absorbed in the breath. And there's a whole development of meditation which goes into developing that concentration, collectedness and concentration of the mind. And so, you know, that's called jhanic practice, or meditative absorption. And so, you know, some of you have done some of that. In the practice of insight or vipassana, we develop our attention, our collectedness of mind enough so that we're present in our moment-to-moment experience. So we're not going kind of deep into a kind of an absorption state. We're simply present with our moment-by-moment experience. And as we develop this calmness and this quietness of mind, what's actually happening is that, you know, we all of us, have many, many habits of mind, conditionings of mind. And some of our conditionings of mind are skillful, you know, like generosity and compassion and empathy. So it's wonderful to be mindful of those, and we can you know, appreciate those as they come up. We also have unskillful, afflictive habits of mind, and those are what create suffering in our lives, create suffering for ourselves and create suffering for others. And so we're mindful of those in another way when we do our practice. And as the mind becomes more quiet, and we're not continually going into the story and kind of, you know, he did this to me, I should have done that, this was wrong, I'm going to do this to, you know, to show him or show her, you know, what's right, or I can't possibly manage this, this is too overwhelming, and all of these ways that we talk to ourselves that that create suffering, we begin to become aware, more present with those. We're not lost in them. We're not caught in them. They're not hooking us and bringing us into that whole state of, you know, getting lost, carried away on that train of thought, or lost in that that dream or that fantasy, whether it's a pleasant or an unpleasant fantasy. And so, as we begin to practice insight practice, as the mind becomes more calm and stable and attentive, we're seeing these thoughts and emotions arising. And so this can be difficult. It's difficult to see these things. It's painful to see these things. I a long time ago when I did, you know, one of my first longer retreats, I remember just seeing how the mind was always judging, my mind, you know, this mind was always judging how people were doing walking meditation, judging what clothes they wore, judging how they took their meals, and judging myself. You know, that I discovered a little bit later, you know, oh, the mind is so harsh on myself. And this was very painful for me to see. And I spent a good part of one afternoon, you know, sitting by a pond and just, you know, crying, because it was so painful to see what a judging mind I had, or was, you know, this conditioned mind was so conditioned to be so judging, because it went so much against my self-image. You know, here I was, you know, working as a chaplain, and I'm a kind person, I think to myself. I care about people. And the mind said, well, yes and no. So when we begin to encounter these habits of mind, it's our task in Vipassana meditation is to not turn away from it, but to actually turn toward it and bring our mindful awareness to it, mindful investigation, to recognize that first of all, it's arising. I didn't choose for that judging thought to arise. It's arising selflessly. It's arising on its own from causes and conditions. Causes and conditions of my life. I remember asking a teacher, well, why does the mind do that? You know, what? You know, I don't want to think those judging thoughts. Why does the mind keep coming up with those? And he said, well, it's the best you could do with what you had at the time. That made sense to me as I thought about my life. You know, it was the best I could do to make sense of my life at the time with what I had. And now, or at that time, I was learning more skills, so I could do something more skillful, something that caused less suffering. So these thoughts, these emotions, arise selflessly. In a very immediate way, in mindfulness of the body, we're seeing sensations arising moment by moment by moment. And we're going to be focusing this morning in a few minutes on mindfulness of the body. And so we'll see that these are also arising selflessly, sensations, breath, sensations, rising and falling. We also see that they're impermanent. They're coming and going. So when I turn toward the thoughts, the emotions, the body sensations, I recognize that they are arising and passing away continuously. And and also with enormous rapidity. It's just a flow. In fact, there's nothing but flow. It's just, sensations arising, passing, arising, passing, thoughts coming and going, emotions. When we don't cling to them and make stories about them and act on them, we actually recognize that they arise and pass away. And that's very powerful. So what I'm describing, the insight into the selfless nature, the insight into the impermanent nature, these are non-cognitive insights. So they're not ideas. There are some things. They're recognitions, realizations that we that are deeper than just an idea. Or they're not something to hear and believe. The third insight that the Buddha asks us to discover in our experience is that of the unsatisfying or unfulfilling or unreliable or suffering nature. So there's a whole spectrum, that's there in our experience. Any experience, if it's a pleasant experience, it may be pleasant for a moment or a few moments or a little while, and then it's going to change and it's going to become, something else, neutral or perhaps painful or difficult. So, or if it's an unpleasant experience, it's inherently unpleasant. So the Buddha says, don't try to find happiness or fulfillment or peace or contentment in the conditions of your life, because you're just going to be frustrated. It's a losing game. So how many times have we done that? How many times have we thought, this relationship or this job or this home or this, this experience is going to, really bring me happiness. And it's not to say that there's no happiness or pleasantness to be found in experiences, but when we cling to them and we try to make them more than what they can be, then we experience disappointment, and we're just on that treadmill of looking for the next pleasant experience or trying to escape whatever grief or loss or hurt or guilt we may feel in the moment from something difficult that we're facing in our lives. So these three qualities or characteristics of impermanence, of unsatisfactoriness or unreliability or suffering, and selflessness. The Buddha says, look at your experience and see if you don't find, he says, I invite you to examine your experience and notice that there's nothing that you can take in that's not characterized by these things. Nothing that you can take in through the senses, through the cognitive, the conceptual mind, that's not characterized by these things. And so what happens is as we bring our mindful attention that's been developed through the samatha practice, and we explore each moment of our experience, the breath, body sensation, emotions, thoughts, especially beginning with body sensation. You know, we discover the impermanent nature, that everything's arising and passing away, that we can't hold on to, we can't hold on to a particular moment of pleasant experience, or even avoid or push away what we don't want to experience, what's unpleasant. So what happens over time as we practice insight meditation, vipassana, we develop a wisdom. We develop a sense of wisdom in which we deeply realize these truths of impermanence. The Pali word is anicca. Dukkha. Dukkha holds within it that whole range that I talked about. So it's a good word because I don't have to say the whole range. Dukkha. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Anatta is that non-self. So we're seeing these three characteristics, and it shifts our relationship with what we're experiencing in life, so that, you know, the clinging, the resisting, the being lost in past and future begins to dissipate. We're living more and more in the present, and that's wonderful, because it's in the present moment that we can actually respond, that we can express our love, that we can make a choice, that we can feel joy, that we can play. So when we're living in the present, we're actually living in a way that's more alive, more connected. And as this mindfulness becomes well established in our lives, then a kind of practice which is called choiceless awareness. I don't think there's a Pali word. I'm not familiar with a Pali word. It's actually that expression comes from Krishnamurti, who was talking about a kind of meditation. Krishnamurti was a non-denominational teacher in the 20th century, Indian teacher who very deeply realized person, and he said the mind is just present, open, aware, and seeing. So when we're practicing choiceless awareness meditation, we're just simply seeing the arising and passing away all the time. And there's a stability of awareness. So it's not like we're kind of in the river. You know, if we're in the river, like on a boat, we might think that the shore is moving, but when we're actually attentive to the fact that we're on a boat, and there's that stillness, we realize that the mind is moving, and yet within that that movement of the mind, of seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, thinking, there is this stability of presence. And so when we're living out of that that presence within ourselves, that's a place of peace, of equanimity, of balance, of compassion. It's a place of connectedness. It's not a place of indifference, of isolation or separateness. It's a place of deep connectedness, and yet there's an awareness that everything, that life is flow. Life is arising and passing away. There's a shift that happens in our relationship with our thoughts, our emotions, that we're not trying to change them, but we're at peace with whatever is arising. And we can be with it. We can be present with it. So there's a beautiful poem by Rumi that I'd like to read to you, which I think expresses this this practice and differentiates between kind of the learning through the mind, the learning of ideas and concepts, you know, which we're so attuned to and addicted to in our culture, especially I think with all our, you know, computers and little devices, more and more we are really connected to the thinking left brain kind of knowing, and Rumi talks about two kinds of intelligence, and really what I've described is the development of another kind of intelligence. There are two kinds of intelligence. One acquired. As a child in school memorizes facts and concepts from books and from what the teacher says, collecting information from the traditional sciences as well as from the new sciences. With such intelligence, you rise in the world. You get ranked ahead or behind others in regard to your competence in retaining information. You stroll with this intelligence in and out of fields of knowledge, getting always more marks on your preserving tablets. There's another kind of tablet, one already completed and preserved inside you, a spring overflowing its spring box, a freshness in the center of the chest. This other intelligence does not turn yellow or stagnate. It's fluid, and it doesn't move from outside to inside through the conduits of plumbing learning. This second knowledge, this second knowing, is a fountainhead from within you moving out. This second knowing is a fountainhead from within you moving out. And so this expresses that the wisdom that we are connecting with is really already there. That there is an innate quality of wisdom that we need to, in a way, reconnect with. That somehow, and so many stories in different cultures describe how we've lost our way, we need to find our way home. And so this is, in a way, this journey that, you know, that I'm talking about is a finding our way home to that wisdom, that knowing, which is already within us. Does anybody have any question? Anything that was unclear, or any question that's coming out?
What is meant with choiceless awareness?
So choiceless awareness is in that we're not directing the mind. In the samatha meditation, we have a meditation object, and we keep turning the mind to it. We're letting go and turning the mind to it. So in a way, we're choosing. We're continually choosing to be attentive to a particular object in order for the purpose of calming the mind. And it's, you know, it's a neutral object, so we're not turning, you know, and that's one of the benefits or the pluses of choosing the breath. It's just a neutral object. We're not going to get all excited about, you know, this in-breath or that out-breath. It's a kind of a holding, you know, it's a kind of a grasping, but it's a skillful use of the mind's capacity to hold, you know, that we keep turning the mind back to the breath and holding to it. And then in Vipassana, you know, as we've developed that capacity to be present, to be attentive, that the mind is not always scattered, monkey mind, going from one thing to another, restless, grasping, resisting all the time, but the mind has actually developed more stability and steadiness in present moment awareness, then we're present with the breath, but as something arises in awareness, an emotion, a sensation, we turn our attention to that and we're noticing the arising and passing away of it. We're noticing its selfless nature. We're noticing its dukkha nature. So the mind is moving. There's a kind of a stability, but we're moving from object to object. So there's still some choosing and returning. And there's an openness, kind of an allowing the nature of our experience to unfold and to reveal itself. So, and where there's a non-cognitive, non-conceptual knowing of the impermanent dukkha and selfless nature of these experiences. In choiceless awareness, we're simply resting in awareness. The mind might connect to a sensory object, see it arise and pass away, come back to, you know, presence. So there's So that's what's meant by choiceless. We're not trying to concentrate the mind. The mind has some stability of awareness and presence. So in the beginning of practice, if somebody were to sit down and say, well, I'm going to practice choiceless awareness, it would probably be actually the mind just going, getting lost, you know, in sensations and thinking and daydreams and fantasy. That's not choiceless awareness. The mind might get lost, you know, we're not talking about perfection or, you know, and so, you know, in choiceless awareness, if the mind does get lost, you just come back to the breath. It's a very kind of natural way of moving through these. And they're not, you know, as distinct. Of course, any conceptual framework. So, you know, going back to this poem that I just read, you know, I've just said a whole lot of words about, you know, about practice. So, you know, we're taking in conceptually, we're taking in through the mind, you know, we're hearing teaching. And so, but the point is not to just learn the teaching conceptually, the point is to really apply it. And so that's, you know, sort of part one is hearing it, part two is applying it and realizing it within ourselves, and part three is living out of that realization. So I'd like to I'd like to offer now a guided meditation. So if you want to take a moment to just stand up, release your posture, you can do that.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.